Thank you for listening and subscribing to the Brilliance Security Podcast. Hello, my name is Steve Bocut, and I am an editor for Brilliance Security Magazine. Brilliance is an online digital publication dedicated to the security industry. Our mission, and thus our name, is to illuminate the intersection of physical and cybersecurity. We cover both of these security domains by publishing original content about threats, hacks, products, and security strategies. We hope you will enjoy this podcast and visit us at brilliancesecuritymagazine.com. Welcome to the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your listening. Today, our guest is Richard Stainings, the Chief Security Strategist at Cylira. Cylira is a pioneer in IoT security and intelligence, and we'll learn more about that in a minute. The topic for today, I'm excited to have Richard with us. I think he's the perfect guest for this topic. The topic today is what security professionals need to know about safeguarding medical devices and other hospital IoT devices. So let me read you a little bit about Richard. Let me read you his bio so you can understand why I'm excited to have him in for this topic. Richard Stainings is a globally renowned thought leader, author, public speaker, and international luminary for healthcare cybersecurity. He has served on numerous working groups and boards and has helped governments and private providers formulate long-term strategies and tactical action plans for improved cybersecurity and patient safety across the industry and across the world. Richard serves as the Chief Security Strategist for Cylira, a pioneer in the space of medical device and health IoT security. He is also the author of Cyber Thoughts, a leading healthcare cybersecurity blog, and teaches postgraduate courses in cybersecurity and health informatics at the University of Denver University College. With that, welcome, Richard. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Stephen, for the invite.
All right. This is going to be fun and interesting. I think that I have a lot to learn from you, and I'm looking forward to it. Before we get into the topic too much, please take a few minutes and talk to us about Cylira. Give our audience an idea of who Cylira is, what they do, background, whatever you think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined Cylira at the beginning of 2019, about 18 months or so before the solution that Cylira had been working on went public and was launched. The MedCommand platform had been developed for about 2 years already in stealth mode at a number of academic medical centers where clinicians were helping to optimize the solution for their needs rather than trying to bang a square peg into a round hole, as is often the case with software companies, unfortunately. I was approached by three very smart founders of the company and asked for some advice on a number of areas about their solution and a go-to-market strategy that developed into a great working relationship. And 4 years later, I'm still helping to drive the company and its solutions forward. Cylira now secures the medical and other healthcare IoT systems of a large number of healthcare providers across North America, the UK, including much of the British NHS, Europe, Middle East, and Asia Pac. And it is a rather different solution, and we'll probably talk about this in more detail later on in the interview. But Cylira looked at the state of play of the medical device environment across the United States and Europe, and look critically at how could they possibly improve the security of what was becoming an overwhelming growth of medical devices that were attached to medical networks. Medical devices are growing at an astronomical rate. In the United States, it's somewhere between 6 and 10%. Globally, it's at 25% per annum. So you can see that this problem or this concern is growing astronomically. And we didn't really have, before Cylira, we didn't really have a solution to manage risk, to assess assets that were connected to our networks, or to automate the remediation of some of those risks that we discovered. And that's one of the reasons why I was so excited by the design of the Cylira platform and what it had done, and by the enthusiasm of the founders to do what it took to protect what matters most. And that is obviously patient safety at the end of the day, right? There is a cost of loss to hospitals that are hit with cyber attacks. But at the end of the day, the real cost is the impact to patients. And that's why, you know, I latch my horse to this wagon and have been driving forward for the last 4 years.
Interesting. Okay. And now, and anybody that's been watching the news or has any interest in cybersecurity, they've undoubtedly read a lot recently about this problem, threats to IoT devices or the healthcare industry. It seems like it's not a day goes by that I don't read something about this particular problem. So give us kind of a high level overview, if you will, of the magnitude of the security threats that the healthcare industry faces today.
Yeah, so healthcare, unfortunately, is in the crosshairs of cyber criminals everywhere, mainly because of the value of its PII, its personally identifiable information, and its PHI data, the personal health information data that hospitals store, our medical records, our complete, you know, address, phone number, address, social security number, all of these types of things, right, all contained in the data that we entrust to our medical providers. There's also another big caveat here, and that is the value of clinical research and intellectual property. A lot of particularly academic medical centers are developing cutting-edge solutions. They're working in conjunction with pharmaceuticals to develop new drugs, new drug treatment regimens, et cetera. And this is all highly valuable to other healthcare providers, and criminals are out to steal that information to sell it, or in the case of some nation states, to steal it and to provide that information to their own state-owned industries and healthcare providers. So it's got multiple targets focused upon healthcare. One of the most significant as of recently is the availability target, and we've seen some massive attacks, some devastating attacks through ransomware against hospital providers, healthcare providers globally, you know, from the British NHS to the Irish HSE to some of the world's largest healthcare systems in the United States, right? According to Cylera research, between 2 and 3 US hospitals as of the end of 2022 are being attacked by ransomware every single day. So this is not a small problem. It's a growing problem, and it's one that impacts all of us if we want to go see our doctor, or if we want to go for an operation, or we're involved in a road traffic accident and need emergency care, because often hospitals are no longer available when they've been hit by a ransomware attack. Cybercrime is now a $6 trillion industry, according to 2021 data by Cybersecurity Ventures. By 2025, cybercrime will cost an aggregate $10.5 trillion USD, according to Cybercrime magazine. If the largely Russian crime syndicates were a separate country, they would have the world's third largest economy after the United States and China. So this is massive amounts of money that they are squeezing out of US healthcare and other healthcare providers around the world. You know, and that doesn't even include the cost of loss that China's stolen over the past 20 years in terms of clinical procedures and drugs and everything else. This is very big business, right? It's big business for, you know, the mafia type groups that are extorting our hospital systems. It's big business for the state-owned enterprises that are benefiting from stolen IP. And it is highly, highly disrupted to populations because we're not able to receive the healthcare services we need. And at the same time, we're losing a lot of our IP and PHI. So to give you a point here, according to Health and Human Services, the Department of Health and Human Services in the United States, cumulative breaches of health records have resulted in the exposure of 314 million healthcare records. That, by my counting, comes to about 95% of the population. So people not being concerned about this is a bit of an anathema, right? The question becomes, is there value to me going to extreme lengths to protect my medical records being stolen for a second time or a third time or a fifth or a sixth time, right? And this is, I think, where we need to look more closely at the magnitude of the threats and risks facing the industry and a block and adapt more appropriately to the types of risks that we're seeing. So for an example, CommonSpirit ransomware attack, which CommonSpirit is one of the larger healthcare systems in the United States, was hit with ransomware at the end of 2022. It alone impacted 200 million people that were denied services or were delayed in receiving services or were impacted in some other way. It resulted in ambulances being diverted because hospitals were closed because they were under attack. And the question we need to ask is, what is the impact when these sorts of availability attacks take place against healthcare? What is the impact on patient morbidity and patient mortality? Now, we've already seen at least two patients die because of ransomware attacks. There are probably many, many more that just have not been reported because of the liability of doing such. But there is a definite connection here between cybersecurity and patient safety. And I'm not sure that we all really understand the significance of that. The trouble is, from a ransomware perspective, is that that healthcare pays ransoms a lot more frequently than other industries because of the lack of security and IT capabilities that hospitals have, the lack of preparedness that they have for these types of interruption to services. And this, by paying the ransoms, actually fuels the ransomware industry. They know they can get paid, and they know that healthcare is a lucrative target, and therefore they're focused on attacking hospitals and other medical providers. Now, to bring this back to medical devices, we've got now approximately 3/4 of the IP-connected assets on our hospital networks are, in fact, medical devices. They're largely unmanaged. Often they were designed with no security in their designs whatsoever, particularly legacy devices more than 2 or 3 years old. Many of those devices are not being patched. Many have never been patched throughout their lifespan. And unlike a Windows PC, which will last you 2 or 3 years, a medical device is designed and often amortized over a much longer period, perhaps 15 years. Mm-hmm. So we have devices keeping patients alive in our hospital systems that are from the era of Windows XP. Now, I'm sure you and everyone you know probably wouldn't advise doing their banking on a Windows PC running Windows XP, right?
Exactly.
Because you're just asking to be hacked, right? Mm-hmm. Same with if you were, looking at your 401k or your stock trades or, God help you, your cryptocurrency, trades, right? You're just asking for trouble using a device that is that old, that has that many vulnerabilities and is that insecure. Yet we keep patients alive with devices that are from that era, right? From the era of dial-up modems. And, this is the dilemma we're in today.
Excellent. So, and I really appreciate that. That's a great overview of the types of information or the digital assets that threat actors are after in the medical environment, the types of attacks that they're using. And let's narrow our focus here a little bit and talk about the threat vectors themselves. So the IoT devices, most specifically, what kinds of devices are most vulnerable, and what kinds of devices have you seen have been targets in this environment?
So let me talk about specifically about healthcare, because in healthcare we have one of everything, right? We have a number of different discrete device types. The most important or most widely publicized is that of medical devices. By that we mean systems, big iron systems that maybe perform an X-ray or a CT scan or an ultrasound or a PET scan on a patient, right? We have treatment systems. Systems that treat patients with radiotherapy, chemotherapy, right? For example, and other systems. We have patient telemetry systems that monitor and manage patients, right? They monitor O2 saturation, pulse, heart rate, blood pressure, right? And if you've been into a hospital recently, you probably won't be surprised to know that there are at least 6 to 10 medical devices next to any patient bed, and probably a lot more that are on wheels that can be brought in for your specific condition if you show up in the emergency room, for example, right? In ICU, we're looking at upwards of 25 medical devices next to every ICU bed, and that is increasing every single year as we find new medical devices that can help us to to drive better patient outcomes, better patient survival rates, and a better patient experience in the hospital. That includes everything from nurse call systems to TV telemetry systems to monitor patients, because nurses obviously cannot be in a private room all the time, every time. Instead, we can use a leveraged staffing model where one or two nurses in a nurse call center monitor 20 patients, right, in their own respective rooms via CCTV and via all of the telemetry that is then sent back to hospitals. And that is a growing trend globally as the number of nurses is constrained. We all know that healthcare doctors and nurses are constrained. We don't have anywhere near enough doctors and nurses to deal with the number of patients that we have, particularly as folks like you and I get closer to retirement and therefore become, you know, bigger users and consumers of medical services. And therefore, we have that mismatch. And then we also have, you know, simple network connected devices that treat patients, things like network connected infusion pumps that administer drugs to a patient based upon what is called the programming of the drug library that determines the frequency of the drugs. Is this drug to be dispensed over 20 minutes because the patient's in chronic pain and we need to get as much morphine into them as possible, as quickly as possible? Or maybe they're dehydrated and therefore we need, you know, lots of bags of in order to rehydrate that particular patient. Or is it something that we need to drip into a patient over the course of 4 or 5 hours, right? One could have, you know, big impacts in terms of pain management by a patient not receiving enough medication. The other could potentially put the patient into a coma, right? If the drug were dispensed too quickly. And that's the same of various other drugs, you know, whether you're a diabetic receiving insulin or, you know, other drugs that are being dispensed to a patient. So that's the medical device categories, right? Then we have all of the ancillary healthcare IoT systems that would include, you know, our CCTV cameras for security, electronic door locks to parts of the hospital to prevent patients from wandering into the operating room, for example, right? These sorts of things. They're typically controlled by physical security guards, right? And they go back to a separate call station. Then we also have a lot of building management systems in healthcare, things like elevators, right? That are vital to patient workflow. You couldn't expect to bring a patient in on the ground floor of a 20-story hospital tower, which is common today across many hospitals. They go up rather than out. And to bring that patient in on a gurney from an ambulance for that patient to be seen in the emergency room, to then maybe go to radiology for images on the second floor, to then go to the fifth floor for surgery in an OR, to then come out and go into the ICU on the seventh floor, and then eventually to get to post-op recovery on the 19th floor, right? We couldn't expect to move that patient up and down a stairwell on a gurney with you know, nursing staff carrying them up and down those things. So elevators are absolutely critical to hospital workflow. The same is true of things like HVAC, right? The positive and negative air pressure that is required in various parts of the hospital. We want positive air pressure in our emergency rooms because we want to keep them clean, right? We want to keep all the bacteria, viruses, anything else, all dust outside of the OR so that that isn't introduced to an open wound to the patient. And conversely, we want to keep patients who are perhaps highly communicable in a pandemic disease situation, like any pandemic disease. Obviously, you know, we've been suffering for the last 2 years with COVID, but that's by far not the only pandemic disease that hospitals deal with. And we want to make sure that that patient room is in a negative air pressure zone so that air is being sucked in through any door vents or anything else and not allowing viruses or pathogens to enter the larger nursing community or other patients who may also be in the same part of the hospital. And we have HVAC there that evacuates that air up to the roof of the building where it's filtered and then is sent out, you know, on the 20th floor or whatever out into the stratosphere, right? So we have a lot of different systems in a hospital, and the vast majority of these systems are now all connected. And connected is the key word here, right? Mm-hmm. They're connected to a network of sorts, whether it's a VLAN medical device network, which doesn't really offer security, but unfortunately that's the way that a lot of hospitals have their medical devices attached, or a security and out-of-band security network that manages physical security, or a facilities network that manages building management, right? Often a lot of these systems like elevators are managed by third parties from hundreds of miles away, right? Same with HVAC. Same with other building management systems like labs and what have you, right? Often medical devices are managed by third parties that manage a particular group of medical devices or a particular vendor's medical devices. And these are often managed remotely as well. So we have a large number of devices, about 75% of connected devices in a hospital today, which are on our medical networks or on our healthcare networks. And we have very limited visibility into those devices from a security perspective, and also very limited understanding of the risks that each of those devices may present to the hospital network and to patient safety. Now, to take a junction there, right? Uh-huh. Many of these devices were never designed for today's highly interconnected hospitals. Remember, some of these medical devices are 15 or maybe 20 years old. Some of these devices were written in EEPROM. I don't know if you remember EEPROM, but it was a programming language. It was used extensively, 20, 30 years ago. They are actually more secure than many of the newer devices that run an embedded version of Windows on those devices, because they were never designed to be connected to the network. And in order to change the programming, you need to be physically attached to the device via a serial or RS-232 port, right? Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of devices, medical devices, that were never designed with security. They were designed for functionality. They were designed for a simple task of releasing a drug at a certain pace, or to blast a patient with certain types of radiation for a certain number of seconds or milliseconds, right? Or to scan a patient at a certain level or other of depth, right? And if you start messing with those systems, they can be very, very dangerous, right? In the 1980s, we had cancer patients that were literally fried by their radiotherapy system up in Canada. Anyone who's interested should probably look up the Therac 25. That was not actually a cyber attack. That was just a simple software error. But you can imagine what a nefarious attack against even a simple X-ray system could do to a patient, right? Let alone some of the other aspects of attacking an infusion pump and dispensing the entire bag of morphine into a patient in a very short period and putting them into a coma.
It's amazing to me. So in my mind now, I've envisioned thousands of connected devices, even in a modestly sized healthcare facility. So that, in my mind, begs the question, how do we track and inventory and manage those assets? Can you talk to us about that? What are the challenges in doing that, and how is it being done?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the biggest issue there is that asset inventory systems, asset management systems in hospitals particularly, are inaccurate, right? To give you an example, we at Silera went into a customer. Customer told us that they estimated they had about 10,000 medical devices on their healthcare network. Once we'd hooked up our appliances, we were able to see more than double that number of appliances, right? Sure. And then there was a true up that happened. And they had certain, medical workstations that were in a different inventory system than their medical device systems and what have you. And at the end of the day, they were off by 50%, right? So they didn't know that they had a lot of these assets. They didn't know that those assets were connected to the network in many cases. And as a result of that, they were buying more medical devices than they actually needed. They were spending a large amount, millions of dollars, in fact, on medical devices that they didn't really need because they didn't realize that they already had more than sufficient and just needed to reallocate those. So to give you another example, at one particular hospital system, we were able to save that hospital about $25 million on building a new x-ray center off of their emergency room, because they had lines of patients right the way down the hall waiting for x-rays, particularly on a Friday and Saturday night when all the road traffic accidents came in. And they put that down to a capacity problem. We were able to find unused x-ray machines across the parking lot in an outpatient clinic that were not used after 6 o'clock at night. And therefore, the hospital, by changing its workflows, was able to staff that x-ray system, that x-ray room, with a radiologist and with other ancillary staff, and to send the walking wounded across the parking lot for their x-rays, rather than shell out $25 million on a new x-ray system, right? We found other situations where hospitals have been able to defer large CapEx outlays for a number of years as a result of better device management. We've also found that there are a lot of lost devices on a hospital network. So through our technology, we're able to identify when a particular medical device was last attached to the network, where that was via the wireless AP that it connected to. And therefore, we can send BMETs, biomedical technicians, out to search the closets in that particular ward or part of the hospital to look for a lost medical device. And 90% of the time, we're able to recover those devices based upon where they were last used. We often find that devices go home with patients, particularly smaller devices, particularly during COVID, right? So hospitals were keen to get post-operative patients out of the, you know, pandemically infected hospitals during 2020, 2021. So they sent medical devices home with patients. And obviously, a lot of those devices were communicating back into the network via VPN that had been established for that particular patient in their home. And we were able to track the location and say, hey, this is still with Mrs. Smith. You need to go out there and pick up her medical devices and bring them back to the hospital so that they can be reused, because she's no longer connected to the device. The device is powered off. And therefore, you know, you can save a large amount of money replacing some of these devices, right? Typically, though, I think hospitals have a rather rudimentary understanding of the number of assets they have, and also the number of risks that those assets present to the network, given that they are connected to the medical network. And this is really, you know, where we focus, not just in asset identification, but also in risk identification, to identify what risks each of those medical devices present. Now, there is a HIPAA security rule requirement under the risk analysis section for any device that contains PHI to be risk assessed annually as part of the HIPAA security rule. Most hospitals don't do that because they don't realize what assets they have, and they don't realize that those assets contain PHI from a patient. And that PHI is obviously, you know, could be basic patient telemetry, but it would also include patient name, date of birth, an identifying number for the hospital, all of which are considered protected information. So that's part of the service that the Cylira tool brings in terms of identifying those risks. But it also remediates those risks, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, I'd like to narrow our focus even a little more if we can, and talk about Cylira's platform. I think our audience would be interested in learning how you do what you do and how it's different than legacy solutions.
There have been a number of solutions similar to the Cylira platform that have been around much longer than Cylira has. And they essentially identify assets on the network and perform a threat analysis of those assets. So they identify the assets, they probe the assets, they understand basically with a reasonable level of certainty what a device is. This is a Hospira pump model XYZ, right? It's running ABC version of software and firmware. And then what they do is they contain a large database of NDIS 2 information that provided by the manufacturers that basically outline when there's a CVE, a vulnerability in a device, and they compare apples to apples, and they say, we believe this device is missing these four patches. Therefore, this is the risk analysis of this device. Now, it's based upon inaccurate information in the front half, because you're only maybe 80% sure that the device is what it claims to be. And then secondly, you are reliant upon an NDIS report having been filed by the medical device manufacturer. So what we did was to look at this from a more modern perspective, a next-gen perspective. And we said, well, how can we better identify with 99% accuracy the devices that are on a network? And we used large amounts of machine learning in our approach to identifying those assets. And then instead of actually just comparing that against a static list, we don't even bother with those NDIS lists, right, other than for reports. What we do is we create a digital twin. Now, a digital twin is an exact digital replica of the device that we have probed and assessed based upon passive analysis of traffic patterns across the network. Obviously, in a hospital system, it's very important not to heavily probe or destructively probe a device, because that device could be keeping a patient alive. And the last thing you want to do is to blue screen that device and kill the patient, right? Yeah. So this is the kind of narrow path that all of us tread in terms of understanding the which assets are connected to the network and how much data we get from that. So we, through a process of passive analysis, build up much higher levels of fidelity of the asset. We then create a digital twin where we can do destructive pen testing against that digital twin in a virtual machine world, and understand the real vulnerabilities from a NIST 800-30R2 risk analysis standard, rather than a simple comparison of NDIS, right? NDIS reports, right, missing patches. We're therefore able then to meet the needs of the HIPAA security rule, because we've conducted a real risk analysis of devices containing PHI. We're then able to feed that information into the full compliance matrix that a hospital needs to adhere to for, you know, JCO or Joint Commission, for HIPAA and other regulatory requirements in other countries, and we're globally dispersed across the world. We're also able to analyze those risks, make recommendations as to the remediation of those risks, and through a process of seamless integration with existing security tools and network tools in hospitals, to automatically remediate those risks while we're waiting for a medical device manufacturer to create a patch. If that ever comes, right? Medical device manufacturers are somewhat lame about producing patches in a timely manner. But through a process of compensating security controls, we can enclave an at-risk device or micro-segment an at-risk device using tools that are already owned by the hospital, like Cisco ICE, for example, or TrustSec capabilities, which are already built into the network, to enclave that device and to allow its continued use for patients in a secure manner, while the hospital, you know, chases down patches or decides to replace that device because it's an end of life system or no patches are likely to be forthcoming from that vendor. Sure. And that is an entirely automated process. So one of the fundamental aspects of the Cylera platform is seamless automation and orchestration to analyze a problem, to identify and to remediate and to manage those problems as you move forward. Because one of the biggest issues, and I'll put my former CISO hat on here, is that you cannot hire enough security people in any healthcare environment, or let's face it, in any industry just about at the moment, to match the magnitude of the risks that the organization is facing, right? And healthcare is generally closer to the bottom of the pile because it doesn't offer the lucrative salaries that a JP Morgan Chase would to a security analyst, for example, right? So it's difficult to attract and retain the level and caliber of security staff that you need in order to do things manually. So one of the fundamental tenets of the entire Cylera platform was based upon that automation, ensures that when we bring in Cylera and we replace half a dozen other systems on the network, we are resource neutral or resource negative. That means we actually free up resources to use on other high value tasks in the healthcare security pool, right? Or we are neutral, as in it doesn't require time by security staff in order to manage the Cylera solution once it is set up. And I think that's a critical differentiator when we talk about, you know, the level of complexity in hospitals, how that complexity is increasing thanks to increased interoperability in the introduction of more and more medical devices. And at the end of the day, we need solutions, right? We need to solve problems as security leaders, as executives of healthcare organizations, not just simply report on them.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. We've covered a lot of ground here. We're about out of time, but I do like to end with kind of an open-ended question. The essence of this question is what should I have asked that I failed to ask you? But what else does our audience need to know about cyber threats to medical devices or other IoT devices in the health environment, or about Cylera and your platform?
Yeah, so you know, the problem of healthcare cybersecurity is a growing one. It's not reducing, it's not going away. And thanks to the HIPAA regulations, we have a myopic focus primarily on protecting privacy of patient information. So if we take a step back and we look at healthcare cybersecurity, we are entrusted to protect the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of health data and systems. It's known as the CIA triad, and it has nothing to do with our friends in Langley who are probably listening into this, this podcast, or at least someone is somewhere listening into this podcast from Langley and wondering what we got to say here about. But at the end of the day, it's about protecting patient safety. And I think we've seen, over my 25, 30 years in healthcare cybersecurity, that we've seen a migration away from stealing IP, right? Stealing PII and PHI, protecting the confidentiality of that data, towards protecting the availability of systems, right? Mm-hmm. What happens when a hospital is DDoSed or when it's hit with ransomware and services are no longer available? And what we haven't seen yet is integrity attacks against the data that hospitals hold that physicians use in order to treat patients. So for an example, if the integrity of my medical record were attacked by a particularly nefarious, hacker, and I've probably upset quite a few, Russians, Chinese, North Koreans, and Iranians over the course of my 25 years reporting on this sort of stuff. So I'm probably on someone's target list somewhere. So if I go in for an operation and someone decides to hack my medical record, they change my blood type, right? They change my list of allergies. As a result, I go in for an operation, maybe a mundane appendectomy or whatever, right? The doctors top me up with blood after the operation. They give me the wrong blood. I have a transfusion reaction. They misdiagnose that transfusion reaction as being tainted blood, and they therefore give me penicillin in order to treat that tainted blood, not knowing that I'm actually morbidly allergic to penicillin, which I'm not. But anyway, for this scenario, I am. Before you know it, the patient is coding on the table, right? I'm coding on the table. And the doctors have no idea why, because the information that they have used in order to treat me has been tainted. It's been adjusted. It's been hacked. We haven't seen those attacks yet. Now, the reason that this is important is because medical devices are probably the weakest link on the healthcare network. Right? Mm-hmm. I can sit in the parking lot of any hospital and I can attach to an elderly, insecure medical device that maybe uses WEP encryption or WPA1 encryption, right? And I can break into that medical device, and I've done it many times through permission from the hospital, obviously. But I can attach to that network and I can get into that medical device. I can change it. I can also then traverse across the network, get into the electronic medical record where I can plant ransomware, or I can get onto the mainstream network. This is when we talk about the attack surface, medical devices represent 75% of the attack surface of hospitals, and they also represent about 75% of the risks to an integrity attack against a hospital, to a perpetrator establishing a foothold. And that's why we need to secure medical devices instead of just putting it, burying our heads in the sand and putting it out of the way to say, it's not my problem, right? And the problem we have here is one of organizational structures in healthcare, because typically the BMETs that run these systems don't have a dotted line or a reporting structure into the security group, the CISO, right? Mm-hmm. The clinical engineering that owns those systems or biomedical department that owns those systems don't have a dotted line into security. Facilities group that manages the HVAC systems and the elevators and everything else that's vital to the workflow of a hospital don't have a dotted line into cybersecurity, and nor does physical security, unless physical security is rolled up under a CSO rather than a CISO, right? In which mm-hmm. case they're a joint department. So these are the kinds of organizational challenges that we face when it comes to managing cybersecurity.
Right. Okay. This has been fascinating, Richard. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot in just the few minutes that we've had to spend together. So I thank you for spending some time with us today. I am confident that our audience is going to enjoy this as much as I have. So thank you. And a big thanks to our listeners for being with us. And please remember to like and subscribe if you find this podcast interesting, and join us next time for another episode of the Brilliance Security Magazine podcast.